Okay, so we're singing that last song, which is a beautiful prayer about how we want God to speak to us. And I've got to admit to you, I was slightly distracted because I was playing it sincerely from the heart, looking at that screen on that side. But out of the corner of my eye, out comes Samson. Walking along the front row down the bottom here, in case you didn't see him. And I thought, isn't it great that he is delighting being here amongst the church family? But not to be outdone, seconds later, out comes Lathan. And he's got a little bit more flamboyance in the sky going, and back he goes. And that's a great picture to have in mind as we approach today's text. So if you turn to Matthew 18, as we think about the preciousness of motherhood and the preciousness of this gift of raising children, and what that actually means to those children. Jesus is speaking on that very topic as he spends some time with his disciples, and he's talking with his disciples about what he wants his church to be like. He's speaking to the men who will be the ones who he's trusting to get the church going, to establish it, to build a culture and a pattern for how it operates that will continue through the centuries. And we're going to see a wonderful affirmation of motherhood from God's word as we look at the passage in Matthew 18 together today. But it'll come in sort of a surprising way, a way which has some kind of soberness, some seriousness to it. But in doing so, as Jesus speaks very seriously about the responsibility of how we treat children, it actually elevates the importance of motherhood, fatherhood, and the way that all of us as a community actually work together to build into the lives of the children that God entrusts to our care. Well, as you've heard referenced a few times already today, we are in the middle of something called 3-2-1 Go. By the middle, I mean the very start, actually. This is the first week that we've actually been able to come together at 10 a.m. Last week we were online together at this time. And it's 3 months where our two congregations come together in one gathering. And we're doing that with the emphasis on go. We're thinking together, how are we going forward in mission as a church family? How are we going to run the race that God has marked out for us as a family to run? And one of the things that we've been thinking about is when we read passages like Hebrews, which talk about the race that Jesus has marked out for us, sometimes because of our culture, we think that as an individual, whereas when the Bible is being written, it's written to communities of people. It's written more often than not collectively. And very much that passage has a community in mind of how people run their race together. So as we listen to Jesus speak about how he wants his people to run the race together as a community, the very first thing we discovered from Matthew 18 verses 1 to 4 was he wants us to run with humility. And let me read those verses that we looked at last week as we met online, so they're fresh in your mind because the conversation just continues in the verses that we'll spend some more time on today. So from Matthew 18 and verse 1, we read these words. At that time the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who's the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" And he called a little child and had him stand among them. And he said, "I tell you the truth, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven." And as we reflected on last week, we're not too sure what the intent of their question was when they asked about who the greatest in the kingdom of heaven is. Are they saying with the thought of, how am I going to become great? How am I going to have a real position in this kingdom? Or are they asking with the thought of, what is it that's going to make the greatest impact? How do I really do something great for the kingdom of heaven? It could be either way that they're leaning. And Jesus answers both those questions. For the first one, how do I have a great position? How do I become one of those people who are noticed and celebrated? Jesus kind of responds like this. Well, don't seek self-advancement. Don't make the kingdom of heaven all about you, because it's not. And to the second question, how do I do great things for the kingdom? Well, not by being self-reliant. Don't seek self-advancement and don't be self-reliant, because the kingdom isn't about you, nor does it depend on you. But to be humble like a little child is to turn away from self-advancement. It's to turn away from self-reliance. Instead of advancing ourselves, we want to advance the kingdom of heaven. Instead of relying on ourselves, we want to rely on Christ. That's the emphasis of those first four verses. And now Jesus goes on to describe what that community looks like. And it's really good news for your family. Really good news for our church family as we go forward with humility to discover the next thing that Jesus identifies in these verses. So from verse 5 we read, and so this thing is continuing on, Whoever welcomes a little child like this in my name welcomes me. So Jesus is saying, not only do we need to change and become more like this little child, not in every respect, but in terms of its humility, this child who is welcomed into the presence of Jesus and is not thinking, how do I become the most important person in the room? He's just enjoying the presence of Jesus and he's appreciating being invited in and he's trusting Jesus. And she's saying, not only do you need to become more like that, make it less about you and more about enjoying me, relying less on yourself and relying more on me, not only is it important to become like that child, but also the way that you welcome children matters.
And when you welcome a little child in my name, you actually welcome me. That's a huge thing to think about. As I think about the kids who were just down at the front here a few minutes ago, how I treat those children is akin to how I treat Jesus. It matters that much to him. That's a really significant thing. And we're going to think about that together today, but we're not going to think about it yet because Jesus doesn't stop. He doesn't give his disciples time to really ponder, well, what's that? What are the implications of that for me? He just barrels straight on and says, but if anyone causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a large millstone hung around his neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea. Woe to the world because of the things that cause people to sin. Such things must come, but woe to the man through whom they come. Oh, my clicker's gone off. Could you click the next slide for me? Thanks, Garth. If your hand or your foot causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life maimed or crippled than to have two hands or two feet and be thrown into eternal fire. And if your eye causes you to sin, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life with one eye than to have two eyes and be thrown into the fire of hell. There's a nice, pleasant passage to celebrate Mother's Day with, isn't it? But actually, it's a really empowering kind of passage and message that Jesus is delivering. You need this? Sweet. Oh, I hate it when my gadgets are taken away. I'm going to go through withdrawals. All right, what's Jesus driving at here? What's the simple truths that he's trying to reinforce? Two that we want to keep in mind. Number one, people matter to God. People really matter to God. As you see the consequences of impacting people's lives positively, hey, those things that you do that give people an experience of the kingdom of God, it's like you're doing them to me. That's how much Jesus cares about our positive impact upon others. Those things that you do that lead people to stumble and fall into sin and have their lives moving toward destruction, man, am I taking that seriously too? And you ought to take it really seriously. People matter to God. Not only do people matter to God, but because people matter to God, sin matters to God. The way that we conduct our lives is of great importance to God. Whether we obey his word and aim for the standards that he's called us to live by, whereby everybody is blessed because of the way that we're living, if we are content to fall short of that, if we're content just to go a different way and for our lives to be full of the junk that not only hurts us but hurts others, Jesus takes that seriously and he wants us to as well. These are core convictions that all God's people must have. People matter. Sin matters. And when you are completely convinced of these truths with every fiber of your being, it dramatically shapes how you live. You see, by default, we can tend to undervalue the importance of people. We can tend to be caught up in our own life. By default, we tend to underestimate the impact of our sin and the cost when we lead others into sin. But when we are fully aware of those things, it has a massively powerful shaping effect on our lives, a shaping effect that is positive. What does that produce in us? It produces a holy reverence. A holy reverence where we're not flippant, we're not casual, we're not cavalier in our approach to life and in the way that our lives affects others. We are being very reverent because these things matter to God. Thanks, Bevo. Worked. That's always nice. Let me, as we think about the impact this has in our lives, let me just address a couple of technical issues with the passage so that we don't miss those two really important convictions, that people matter to God. What difference is that going to make to me this week? That our sin matters to God. What difference will that make in my life? What holy reverence will it produce? Before we can actually think about, well, how does it affect me? We really need to think about some technical things that are going on in this passage. And the first one is, who's the little ones or the little children that are being referred to? Because remember, Jesus calls this little child, so literally there's a little kid in their midst, and Jesus is talking about how we treat little children. So should we take that as Jesus is very concerned about how our lives affect little children? Or should we remember that Jesus said, now unless you change and become like little children, you won't even enter the kingdom. So in effect, if you're a part of God's family, he sees you as his child, and how we affect all of God's children is of great importance. Which of those should we kind of go on? Both. And as you go through Matthew 18, sometimes it's not really clear. Does Jesus have more in mind literal, you know, small children at this moment in time? Or does he have in mind all of God's children? Often it's both. Sometimes it's perhaps one more than the other. But Jesus is deliberately knitting together these ideas so that the way we think about each other as members of God's family and children of God is akin, is very, very similar to the way that we think about children. So similar that he could be talking about one or the other, and effectively it doesn't matter, because if you apply it to little children, you'll be doing right. And if you apply it to all of God's children, you'll be doing what right. So keep that in mind as we approach Matthew 18. It's both of those things that are in mind, and that's actually a really helpful thing for us as we think about, okay, how are we going to do this? Because if it applies to little children, it's going to apply to all God's children, and if it applies to all God's children, it's also going to apply in some ways to little children. There's a really useful way of thinking about how we treat both groups when we think about the other group. It's a really helpful illustration, and that's why Jesus uses it. So today is Mother's Day, and because we're going to think together a little bit about literal children, we're going to focus on that first, and then we're going to imagine what is that like to apply these truths with all of God's children as well. You see, the church needs mothers and fathers just as much as literal children needs mothers and fathers. Now, every family is different and it looks different in every family, but those roles need to be filled. In some families, it might be one person seeking to fill both those roles. In some families, it's two people. In some families, and I hope most families, there are other people who are assisting with mothering and fathering roles. What counts is that those roles need to be filled. There needs to be people in every child's life who are mothering and fathering them, who are nurturing them and welcoming them and helping them to grow, to be the people that God's called them to be. And the church needs that too. And it's going to take a whole bunch of different forms. And sometimes it's one or two particular people who really have that role strongly. Sometimes it's a whole range of people who have that role strongly. Sometimes it might be one single person. Whatever it might be, there needs to be mothering and fathering going on in the church of God. And there needs to be older siblings building into younger siblings and so on. And if you think about your life and your experience of church, I hope that there might be some people that you look at and go, you know what, that person's like a younger brother to me. That person's like a younger sister. That person is like a spiritual mother or father, or a spiritual son or daughter. Church is meant to feel like that. That's the kind of attitude we are to have toward one another. Because do you feel the sense of mutual obligation that comes with that? When you don't think of somebody just as somebody else who rocked up and took your seat, or you don't think of somebody as somebody you work alongside in a ministry team, but when you think of them as a mother, a father, a sister, or a brother, that sense of how we invest in each other and the way that we treat each other really matters, it really drives that home for us. So as we think about a little child hearing the invitation of Jesus, coming over, and picture this if you can, and picture the warmth of Jesus that would cause this child to come stand in this group of adults and just bask in the presence of Jesus. Jesus is giving us an invitation. Say, hey, when you welcome somebody else into my presence, when you welcome them into my kingdom, when you help them to feel confident, when you help them to feel drawn to me, when you help them to feel like they belong in this kingdom of mine, you're doing that for me. It's a wonderful opportunity, and it's not just for the little tackers, but it is for them, but it's also for every single other person who God calls you to share a family with. So That's who Jesus is talking about in verses 5 and 6. Literal children, children who are children of God. The second technical thing I want to address is that whole thing of judgment. Because there are some weird verses, right? So if your eye causes you to sin, gouge it out, throw it away. If your hand causes you or your foot, cut it off, throw it away. Does Jesus think that that's going to do any good? No. But one of the wonderful things about the Bible is that it's a story and you read it as a story. And the amazing thing about the Bible is sometimes God will say something at one part of the story and it meant something very important at the time to those who heard it. And it means something to those who read about it later on. But then God will do something else in the story and the people who see what God does at this part of the story go, oh, wow. What God said back then actually makes a lot more sense now because we're seeing what God knew back here, but we didn't until he actually did it in history. Does that kind of make sense? So there are a lot of things. And if you've been a child, which I think most of us have, haven't you had those moments where you realize later on in life because you've had more experiences that something mum or dad or grandma or granddad or your teacher or somebody said back then, you thought you got it, but then later on you went, oh, now I get it. And that's very much what is happening in this story. Jesus is at a particular stage of what he's doing with the disciples. And what he really needs them to understand is that their sin is seriousness. And you've got to take this seriously. And you've got to be willing to do whatever is necessary to get rid of it in your life, to turn away from it, to not let it control you, to not let it cause you to actually impact other people's lives negatively. So he really wants to drive home the seriousness of sin. And I don't know about you, but that's pretty serious. Serious, the way he describes what you ought to be willing to do in order to not let sin flourish in your life. So if I feel convicted that I shouldn't watch that TV show or listen to that song or hang out with that group of people or go to that place, well, I ought to be willing to cut that stuff out of my life because after all, Jesus said, hey, be prepared to go to extreme measures. Now, was Jesus saying literally that you ought to cut off those body parts? Well, one, no, because it's not going to do any good. But two, what's he hinting at that's going to be happening later on in the story? Jesus is going to give his body for our salvation. Not just part of it, Jesus will go to the cross on our behalf because he's the only one who can free us from sin. Nothing we do. Remember humility, self-reliance. We're not going to purify our own lives. We're not going to purify our own hearts. We're not going to be able to stop sinning. I mean, has any human been able to do that? No. But Jesus can rescue us from sin. Jesus takes the punishment sin deserves. Jesus gives us the opportunity to change from the inside out. And so that's going to be happening in the story, and his followers will learn a lot more about that. But for right now, he wants them to grasp this. Your sin's serious. Don't be flippant. Take it with the seriousness it deserves. Make sure you do everything you can to be rid of it in your life. So, those two things in mind, how do we apply what Jesus is speaking about when he speaks about how we ought to treat these little ones among us? Well, this is where his example of a little child is just so helpful. He's really clear that we need to be super careful not to cause a child to stumble into sin. But before we think about what that means for us practically, remember that as Jesus speaks to his disciples, he's got those two things in mind. He's thinking a little child, they're looking at a little child, and he's also just told them, hey, all God's children, you all need to be like this. So this also applies to how you treat everyone. So as we go through a few examples of, well, what behaviors might need to change? What do we need to be careful about when it comes to a little child? I want you to think beyond that little child to all of God's children and ask yourself, do the same things apply? So let me run through some ways that we might stumble into, that we might find ourselves causing a little one to stumble. You could cause a child to stumble by, for example, failing to teach that child what is right and what is wrong. It's a big responsibility if you're a mother or a father or a grandparent or maybe an older Christian friend to teach a child what is right and wrong. How are they going to choose what is right and avoid what is wrong if nobody's teaching them right and wrong? Are we going to let society teach our children what is right and what is wrong? Of course not. So there's a massive responsibility. Now, if I say, you know what, I would love to do that, but I'm just so busy. I've got a really important job and I just neglect that part of what a parent is supposed to do for their child. What am I doing? I'm causing my children to stumble because I didn't do the job that God entrusted to me to teach that child, to teach my children what is right and what is wrong. It applies for me in my role in my natural family. Does it apply to a church family? Or by saying one thing and doing another. You know, as a parent, if I tell my children, don't do this, and then they look at me 10 minutes later and they see me doing that, what am I actually teaching? Am I leading my children to do what is right? Or am I letting them know that you need to say this, but you go ahead and do that? I'm leading my children to stumble. Could that happen in a church setting? Or by never imposing consequences on sinful behavior. Parents, what's going to happen if you never impose consequences or allow natural consequences in your children's lives? Are they going to be able to grasp that there is a God who is serious about sin if you're not serious enough to impose any consequences of them? Are they going to be able to comprehend that it is right that God judges evil if their parents actually weren't serious about judging evil in their lives? There's some really important things that we do for our children in making sure they have consequences for sinful behavior, and that looks different in every season of life. Or what about if we praise their performance? Awesome that Riley got that Auskick Award yesterday. Brilliant. But I know about Steve and Jess that they're not just praising him for those achievements, whether it's a school report or whether it's a sporting award or whatever it might be. I know that for most of us, we actually care most deeply about the people that our children are. So, you know, when you get a report from school, and as a family, we always look through the grades and we make comments, how do you feel about that? Oh, that's awesome, that's a real improvement, or hey, what happened there? Whatever's needed. But what we really try to focus on is the comments. You know, when teachers say stuff about attitude and behavior and their relationships with other students and with the teachers, that stuff really matters, because what do those things show? They show character. And I want my kids to know that their character is so, so important to God and to me, even more important than their grades. Because, you know, you can always find your calling in life. You don't have to be good at everything, and grades can indicate that really, really helpfully. They don't have to be great grades to give you some guidance. Sometimes bad grades tell you just as much that you need to know. The grades aren't the be-all all and end-all. But if I only ever affirm them and look happy at their reports when there's lots of good grades, and don't really pay attention to comments, what am I building into my children and their understanding of what makes them valuable and what they ought to be pursuing in life? I can actually lead them in harmful directions in what I respond to, what I praise. Or by failing to delight in children. Anyone here ever feel really time poor and like you're just scrambling and stressed and that kind of overflows at home? What does it do to a child when you never actually spend time delighting in them? Their jokes are hilarious. The things they learn are so significant. Their artwork is just so creative and amazing. And you don't need to fake it, but to genuinely feel a delight in your children is a wonderful thing. Do you reckon that applies in a church family as well? I think it does. So as Jesus gives us this picture of, hey, guys, be careful. Don't just be flippant about how you treat the little children in your midst. This is actually really serious. What he's giving is not so much a dread warning of, you know, shaking your boots, don't get this wrong, or you're in huge trouble. Yes, it is serious. But by treating these things seriously, we actually open ourselves up to the opportunity of experiencing massive joy personally and building some really positive stuff into our kids, because we've treated our parenting or our big brothering or sistering roles with the seriousness that those things require. I had lunch with somebody this week, and it was a really difficult experience. He tried to kill me with a health shake. Have you ever had those health shakes that people have instead of eating real food at lunchtimes? Oh, gee, I barely recovered. So for revenge, I gave him a fatty steak and eggs lunch. So we had lunch together. And apart from the food aspect, it was a really, really rich time, because we talked about family, talked about how we're going, we prayed with and for each other. And I went home with this sense of, I remember now what really matters in life. And that night I made sure I had some time with the kids where there was a lot of interaction and prayer together and hearing what was going on in their lives and talking about it from a biblical point of view, and made sure that I was playing card games. They even let me win once or twice, which was kind of them. And I just delighted in the kids, and it was such rich time, but I found that before my lunch with this friend, I was actually coasting a little bit and I wasn't giving my parenting as much thought as I should have been. But by stopping and spending a bit of time with this friend and talking about this stuff together, we reminded each other, hey, this is the stuff that really matters. We're in a society that doesn't value family. Have you noticed it? It values individualism. It values how you can advance your own agenda, how you can be validated by people outside your home, whether that's on Facebook or whether that's people in your workplace or people on your sporting team or whatever it might be. Our society is all about the advancement of your agenda and your own self-reliance. Jesus says, no, forget that. Be humble. Follow me. Follow my calling on your life and learn to treat other people as a family and find value in that. Ultimately, I can deal with you guys disapproving of me, and I could deal with you maybe even rejecting me in the role that I'm trying to play in this church place. It'd suck, it'd be terrible, but I'd survive that. But could I bear that from my family? Nah. That's what really matters. These relationships that I have with my wife and with my children, those are the things that I want most of my heart poured into. But I lose sight of that so quickly. But not only is that true of my natural family, God calls for it to be true in this family too. And I really do, as much as that's the first calling, I really do. I want every relationship I have in this family to be awesome. I can't maintain that many close relationships. I struggle with just a handful, let's be honest. But I want us to love each other, to delight in each other, to teach each other, to correct each other, to love being together, because that's what family is meant to be about. And if I'm doing my family well, it helps me with my bigger church family. And when I'm doing my bigger church family well, like my lunch with my mate during the week, it helps me to do my natural family well. Both things matter. They're connected. And so what I'm saying concluding today is please look after family. How we treat other children matters. How we treat our children in our natural family matters. How we treat other children of God matters. And according to Jesus, when we think about how we do that with little children, it'll actually help us to do it with all God's children. And the other side is true. When we think about how we're doing it with all God's children, that also helps us to do it with our natural children better. Let's make sure we do both. Let's not let society drag us away from this wonderful calling. Let's treat it with the seriousness that Jesus does. With holy reverence, may we do family well. Let's pray. God, one of the things that I do love about Jesus is the way that he valued children. There's such a warmth that comes out of him, and there is such a delight that we see in those children responding to him. And that's a calling that you have for each one of us. You want us, and sometimes we commit as a church family when we have child dedications. You want all of us to be thoughtful about how we're investing in these little children as well. We want to help these little children to delight in you just as much as that little child in Matthew 18 who was called into your presence. What a wonderful opportunity and responsibility that is. We can play our part every time we gather on Sunday. We can play our part as we volunteer in kids ministry. We can play our part in how we relate to each other during the week. But thank you that it extends beyond that too. And that we need to learn to see one another as little children in God's kingdom, and to recognize that our impact on one another is just as significant. We have an amazing opportunity to help each other feel welcomed into your family. We have an amazing opportunity to help each other see Jesus more clearly, follow Jesus more closely, trust him more soundly. But yet we also have a danger that our interactions with one another might actually cause us to stumble into sin. We can be encouraging or we can be discouraging. We can be helpful or we can be critical. We can be kind and we can be unkind. So Lord, we want to treat this opportunity with the seriousness it deserves. We want to ask you to purify us from sin because of what Jesus has done for us and enable us to have the kind of impact on each other's lives that you call us to. And God, thanks that as we do this, that the world will see that there is a beauty in family that has been lost and is only rediscovered in Jesus Christ. And may we have the opportunity to introduce many more people to life in Jesus because his family communicates that life so richly. This I pray in his wonderful name. Amen.